Hey guys, this is Ishai Breslauer and welcome to the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. On Mondays, we dive deep into an asset class, and on Thursdays, we go into some inspirational stories for the weekend. Can't wait to start. Let's go. Hey guys, before we start, I just want to point out the 6 best secrets for commercial real estate. It's a free download. Go to the text side and you will find it. It has absolutely great information, completely free, how to become a landlord, how to determine the value of a property, or creative financing for commercial real estate. All of it is completely free. Go download it. Also, I want to point out my CRE crash course. It's a 2-week must-have program with a must-have skills for commercial real estate, like investment strategies, the must-have financial terms, how a deal is done. Go take a look at it, go to the text side and click on the link. And now let's continue with our program. Hey guys, how are you? This is Ishai Breslauer, your host of the CRE Shark Eye Show. Today we have with us Dan Lukowitz. We're going to talk a lot of commercial real estate today. So you guys just buckle up and have fun. But before we even start, Dan, you're involved in a bunch of things. You know what? Give us just the elevator pitch. Tell us what you guys do.
Sure. Well, first of all, Ishai, thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it. So I'm Dan Lukowitz. I'm the senior director of the Lukowitz Group at Encore Real Estate Investment Services. We are a net lease boutique investment sales brokerage. This year, we'll do between $1.2 and $1.3 billion of net lease transactions. I'm also involved as a resort hospitality broker. I'm the host of a show called Dan on Top, which is a streamcast. We have over 140 episodes. Everything can be seen at danontop.com. I'm the co-creator and CEO of the CRE Pro course, which is a development and training program for commercial real estate brokers and investors all over the world. And I'm a father of 4 and, just somebody who loves real estate. I've been involved in many aspects of the real estate game from an investment perspective and a brokerage perspective, syndication, development, et cetera. And it's what I live for. I mean, I love it. I love hanging out with people like you and talking shop.
So I'll tell you something. I wrote down all the bunch of stuff, and I love to throw stuff, you know, and I was about to ask you, are you also a pilot and a doctor?
You know what? If my parents had their way, I would be a doctor, but I think that they're at this point, they're happy. I mean, I've got Jewish parents, like I'm sure you do as well. And 100%. They always wanted me to be a doctor. It's funny. My dad always told me you need to be a doctor or a real estate investor. And I listened to the latter of the two. Pilot. I like drones. I like flying, but no, I like to keep my feet on the ground, keep my head in the clouds.
I love that. I love that. Realistic as can be. Tell me something. Going back to that, what got you into real estate?
So what got me into real estate is that in 2005, I created a company with some friends called Disability Made Easy, and it was a barrier-free home modification company. So it was essentially a construction company that was designed to make homes handicap accessible for individuals that had terminal illness, disability, et cetera, et cetera. I really enjoyed that process, enjoyed seeing the idea of taking something that was maybe functionally obsolete but had potential and converting it into something that served its purpose and helped people. And over the years, I started flipping a lot of houses myself. I started doing my own real estate investing. I got involved. I have a background. I've lived in Israel for a number of years and was trained in fundraising and development. And I quickly became a successful fundraiser when I moved back to America. And at a certain point in time, I got involved in title sales. I ran a sales department and title insurance agency. And I really was able to meld all these passions of sales and fundraising and investing to become a real estate investor. Over time, I was actually recruited by Amazon, and I was a Amazon business development executive here in Detroit, Michigan for a number of years. And I left that corporation to go full-time 100% into real estate investing, purchase, renovation, resale of single and multifamily properties, and then into net lease investment sales brokerage. So that's kind of my story. What's funny is that I just actually released an episode. You'll love this. I released an episode on my show last week, 2 episodes. My bubby, Naomi Traeger, she should live and be well, 96 years old. I interviewed her. She was actually flipping houses in the city of Detroit in the 50s and 60s, okay?
That's exciting.
It is. So it's literally in my blood. I mean, my parents and grandparents they came to this country from Europe, and they were, you know, doing real estate investing in Europe, and then in the refugee camps, and then in America and Detroit. And, you know, my mother was an agent, and my dad was investing in real estate. So it's just, I used to think like that this was a choice, but after really thinking about it, I don't think I had a choice. I think this is just what I was born to do.
That's beautiful. I love that story. Tell me something. When you went into single family homes, right? You went to flip homes and stuff like that. But then you made a switch towards the more commercial side of things.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about the net lease we're talking about in a second. I'm talking about the multifamily. When was the point when you started saying, okay, I'm moving to that side?
Yeah, so that was probably when, you know, there's a period of time during this last recession where I was buying a lot of property in the suburbs, you know, great, you know, brick homes that were well-built in great neighborhoods, and the prices were incredible. I mean, I was buying them at you know, some homes I was buying for $4,000, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $60,000. And this is all the way up into the mid-teens, you know, 2013, 14, 15. When the inventory started to dry up and the prices started to go up, I rebranded my company. We went from Oakland Real Estate Ventures, from which is Oakland County, Michigan, to Renaissance Real Estate Ventures in the city of Detroit, the Renaissance. And that whole market is about 7 or 8 years behind the rest of the country in terms of the foreclosure crisis, which is a whole nother schmooze and very fascinating. So when I did that, I was able to actually scale my company by hiring crews and building out, you know, businesses within my business and really start scaling and making a machine of flipping. And when I did that, I recognized that there was like one major constraint, okay, in my operation, and that was me, right? It wasn't the money, it wasn't the houses, it wasn't necessarily the people, but it was me. There's only so many of me, right? It was very hard to train other people to replace me. So what I recognized was that, you know, scalability was very important. And if I was working so hard, maybe on a flip, I'd make $2,000, $3,000, $5,000, $10,000. On an incredible flip, maybe I'd make 50 or 60 or 70 grand, right? But at the end of the day, there's a lot of risk. And then if I was tenanting them or if I was selling them turnkey, right? It's one property, maybe one tenant, one family, one roof, one boiler or furnace, one electrical system, one sewer line, and one rental check or one commission, right? Or one flip, one equity event. Whereas when you deal with in the commercial space, whether it's multifamily or hospitality or shopping centers, you have a diversified income stream, right? And you also have an economy of scale. So I recognized actually through a really great book, it's called Multifamily Millions. Highly recommend it. It's by Dave Lindahl, little blue book, very short. I literally was at the library looking for other books. I found that one. I didn't even leave. I read the whole thing. And it talked about, you know, the scalability in multifamily is such that the only difference between a 40 unit, 400 unit is the number of zeros, right? And it's not just the number of zeros in the asset, it's the number of zeros probably in your bottom line and in your equity buildup or in your rental amount or in your, you know, your commission, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I have the same strategy as a broker. I mean, tomorrow I'm listing a $47 million property. It's an exclusive listing. I also list $4 million properties. I also list, you know, $800,000-$900,000 properties. And the workload is pretty much the same. So I just think about it in terms of scalability and efficiency of time. And that's why to me, single family is great. I look at it as like a gateway drug. It got me into what I do, but it's a habit that I scratch from time to time, but it's definitely not my bread and butter anymore.
Beautiful. Tell me something. At a certain point you got into net lease. When was that? How was that? That's a different experience altogether.
Yeah. So also fascinating. I was at Amazon and, you know, my father's not an entrepreneur. He owned pharmacies in the city of Detroit, and which is a whole, you know, whole battle in and of itself. But, you know, while I was at Amazon, I was a business development executive, you know, building the Amazon business platform. And my dad always pushed me. He said, you know, these fulfillment centers, find out who's in charge of the real estate because they're taking dirt and they're putting a blue ribbon tenant in and they're building a warehouse and they're making it a, you know, multi-million dollar asset. And I never really pursued that at Amazon. I learned about it, but I always was fascinated by the aspect of these properties where you could take a tenant who would move in there, pay a very high rent, very low return on investment for the investor, but incredible stability, right? And what was very incredible security, great corporations. What was interesting to me was that you could literally take a piece of dirt, put a building on it that's just a box, put the tenant in, and now all of a sudden that asset is worth a tremendous amount more. So while I was at Amazon, I was recruited by a brokerage that specialized exclusively in net lease. And I remember when I got into it, I couldn't believe that people were paying a 5 or 6% return for, you know, Wendy's or a Tire Kingdom or, you know, a FedEx building. Because I was used to flips in Detroit or rentals in Detroit with 30 or 35% cash on cash returns. So when I got into it, that's when I really had another aha moment, Yishai, where I said, you know, my best flips, my absolute best flips, and those are the ones that don't get broken into, or maybe they do. Those are the ones that things don't get stolen, where people don't walk off jobs, where I don't lose money, where I'm not, you know, scrambling and going gray and pulling my hair out. The best of the best of the best might have been a five-figure commission, right? My average commercial real estate brokerage deal is at least a five-figure commission, and I have almost no money out of pocket, you know, just my operating costs. I have zero activity. I can literally sit, you know, I'm moving right now. So I'm in my father-in-law's house to jump on this, right? I can travel. I can hire my own people. I can create my financial destiny. So for me, when I got into the industry, although it was very intriguing and didn't make a ton of sense, I also knew that major institutions were investing hundreds of billions of dollars every year into this space. And as an investor, I am rarely a forward thinker, right? I'm creative and I come up with different ideas, but I am someone who always follows the money, right? If I'm investing in a city, I look at what the city's doing, what the big dogs are doing, and I just follow them. So same thing here. If the big real estate investment trusts and the big family offices and the big funds and insurance companies and lenders, they're all going after this, you know, absolute triple net, highly exclusive, guaranteed, secure, stable bond real estate, well, hey, as a broker, why don't I do that as well?
You know what? It's amazing what you're saying, because when we follow those big guys, and I know that every big guy has a bigger guy. That's how it works. You know, when you figure out that, you know, you're doing $2 million deals, you have the guy who does 10, and the guy who does 10 is following the guy who does 40, et cetera, et cetera. You know, until we get to the, you know, to those huge corporations who do those $1 billion, you know, and buy portfolios and do all those things. And I love what you said about net lease. You know, this whole field of net lease is, you know, anyone who's looking at it the first time and saying, hey, there's a whole world of people who don't want to really do real estate. And their whole thing is to get a check and they don't want to deal with anything. And the net lease is just, you know, this triple net idea is just such, you know, such a solution for their lives.
Sure.
It's an amazing thing, especially when you're talking about 1031 exchanges, et cetera. They're all kind of tricks like that. I love that. There's one thing that you've mentioned, and I'm really excited about. There's one thing that I'm constantly learning about. I didn't get a chance to do it myself, but there's something that I'm constantly reading, and that is the world of resorts, okay? This is just a bug of mine. I'm excited about that world. Didn't get a chance to get into it yet. I don't know when. Maybe with you, maybe with someone else at some point in the future. I don't know. Obviously, COVID did a number on, you know, on all of us, and we're going to talk about this soon. But before we do, what got you into resorts?
Yeah, so good question. I'm still trying to figure that out. I think that part of it would be my wife. I mean, we like to go to resorts. We like the experience of, you know, we're both very busy, you know, high-powered professionals, high-activity people. And when we go somewhere, we want, like, not unlike a triple net deal, we want all of the needs to be taken care of. And what's important to us is the beach, the pool, the food. Really, that's really it. You know what I mean? And the people, the service and all that. So, you know, I got involved in some hospitality deals over the years in terms of conversions of real estate in South Florida into veterans housing or into other types of, you know, longer term property. And really what happened was I had clients who, you know, I sold some fast food deals for them. And you never know, like, you know, you never know what leads to what, especially in this business. And I had sold some fast food properties here in Michigan for them. And I knew they had some more real estate, but many times the big players in this industry, they don't let you know what they have until they trust you and until you perform for them. So after I performed one time, they told me about a little bit more and I worked with them on that and performed on that. And eventually, you know, I knew they had hotels, but I had no idea the level of quality and quantity of the resorts that they had. And they reached out to me and they basically said, look, you know, I mean, it's really funny. I'll tell you the story. Two brothers, right? They had this corporation for years. They're in their late 70s and they play golf. So they must be great friends. I've actually never met this client in person, even though I've sold a lot of real estate for that for him, but super nice guy. And that's my business. I rarely meet my clients in person. So I remember that, I'll never forget this. I was just looking through my emails this morning. So he wanted to sell these resorts and his brother wanted to use his brother's broker. He wanted to use me. And he called me up. He said, oh, I, you know, we got an offer X amount of $1 million from my brother's broker. I feel bad. I want to use you. I like you. Can you give me a proposal? Let me know what it's worth. I said, sure. When do you need it? He said, 3 days. So I said, okay. Wow. I didn't know what I was getting into. I looked at the property, went through everything. Wow, this is a great property. So comes the deadline. I give him out the proposal. He says, okay, look, my brother really wants his broker. I really want you. And we're going to do what we always do to settle a disagreement. Okay. I kid you not. He said, we're going to go play golf. Okay. So the two brothers, they go play golf, right? And I get this email later in the day from my client. And he says, Dan, I want to let you know, I played golf with my brother. My brother beat me. And I really like you. He really wants his broker. So how about you both get, nobody gets the listing. You both you both fight it out. So I said to him, I said, I know I'll hustle harder, work harder, give a better price, make it seamless, more, easier for you and better for you than anybody in the country. So you tell your brother that he needs to trust you because you're usually right. And he needs to give Dan Lukowitz the listing. And next time I'm on your part of the state or your part of the country, I'll take you out to dinner and we'll play a round of golf. But I guarantee you're both going to beat me because I'm terrible at it. And I said, here's the attached representation agreement. And the guy called me up. He said, you know what? I showed my brother the email. And by the way, when I went to send the email, I didn't realize that the brother was on the chain. And then right when I was about to send it, I saw him and I said, you know what? Just be myself. Boom, sent it out. And they liked that. I think they believed in me and they knew I believed in myself. And that won the listing. And I mean, here we are now. Now all of a sudden, I'm a resort broker.
That's an incredible story. Not only an incredible story, but I want to ask you this. The whole world of hospitality and resorts, the way I have all kind of real estate courses myself, and the way I teach it, I always say to people, meaning it's designed in a way that you need certain type of knowledge base for each asset class. And it goes like this: single family, multifamily, and goes up to office and then retail. And the last one is resorts. Obviously you have things in between and above, development and mixed use, et cetera. I'm not getting into that. And industrial is somewhere in the middle also. But hotels is always at the top because it's a business within a business because of the whole food and beverage, platform and the whole RevPAR, calculations. And you have to know a lot of stuff in order to get into that. So when you got into this, all of a sudden you probably said to yourself, I need to know a lot more.
Yeah.
So what did you do?
Great question. So I'm never afraid to ask questions. So I have clients and friends that know way more than I do about hospitality deals. So first thing I did was I called them. I obviously checked the seller to see if I could share the information. I called them. I said, what would you price this at? How would you underwrite this? What would you do? And we walked through the deals together. And because we have a value-based relationship, they weren't looking for anything out of it. In fact, they were happy I was coming to them because that meant that they got a sneak peek at a pretty exclusive deal. So it was just through asking the questions, doing the underwriting, just like anything, just like how did I learn to ride a bike? I took the training wheels off and I figured it out. So same thing here. And that's my advice to a lot of people out there who are in my course or in our mentorship program or who are watching this great podcast is that you don't need to know everything. You just have to have an open mind. You have to have good people in your network, listen to good content, have good mentors, and try, right? Be active, make those moves and figure it out over time. If you try to figure out everything before you invest, you will never invest.
That's right. I love that aspect. So left shift gears a little bit. You're holding two hats. You have two hats. You're wearing two hats. One is the hat of a broker. Boutique broker, unique broker, call it whatever you want. And you're giving those services in the highest level. And then you have the investor hat.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the shifts, that you do running, taking off this hat, wearing on the other hat.
Yeah. It's a dance. They're never, ever both off at the same time. They're both always on. And I think that transparency allows me to be a better broker and a better investor. Because when I'm speaking to clients, I'm looking at it through my perspective as an investor and as a broker and vice versa. When I'm looking at investments, I'm looking at it as a broker and as an investor. So I think that it allows me and affords me the opportunity to be more well-rounded and frankly, more transparent with everyone about my true thoughts on a deal. Now, obviously, if I'm going to be involved in a deal, I have to disclose to both parties. And I think that in the residential space, sometimes it's misunderstood because people think, well, you can't be a broker and an investor. And the truth is you can, so long as you disclose and, you know, you're fair and honest with everyone. And on the contrary, imagine if I come to you, Yishai, and I say, hey, I'm Dan Lukowitz. I'm a broker. I've got this deal. You should buy it. Why am I telling you should buy it? I'm going to buy it with you. We're going to do a deal together. I'm giving you the same advice I would want you to give me. So I think that's more powerful. And that's the beauty of commercial real estate, is the potential transparency and ability to just put it all out on the table. Because when you win, I win. When I win, you win. The sum of us together is much greater than if you take us apart. And for me, those hats are never both off. They're always both on. And it's allowed me to become more successful and more sophisticated investor and broker at the same time.
I love that. Tell me something in terms of net lease, and I want to really talk more about resorts. We're going to get to it in a second, but the net lease world, the whole world of net lease has a lot of many types of tenants, right?
Yeah.
You have all kind of tenants in the world in that lease. Which types are you dealing with for the most part?
So again, a lot of hats. I mean, I do a lot of single tenant net lease, specifically in the quick service restaurant space and the automotive, tire store space. I also do a lot of single tenant, absolute triple net hospitals, medical office buildings, ambulatory surgery centers, et cetera, urgent cares. I've done a lot of shopping centers, multi-tenant shopping centers. And then, now with the hospitality and dollar stores. So it's really one of those things that, I'm a specialist. It's almost would be the equivalent of I'm a surgeon, right? I'm a brain surgeon. And by doing brain surgery over and over again, I have experience, operating on a lot of different capillaries and then very, extensive and complicated brain structures and organs, right? And then I might be called in to try this surgery, and it's very similar, but it's different. I study it, I learn. I become a better surgeon at that new thing, but I also am a better surgeon as a brain surgeon as well. And I think that's how it goes with net lease, is that, I became an expert in shopping centers, and then I was exposed to quick service restaurant, became an expert there, exposed to, medical office, expert there. And then comparing and contrasting, now I'm just all the more well-rounded for a guy like you to come and say, hey, Dan, what do I need? Or, hey, Dan, help me sell this. And I would just tell you that as specialized as net lease sounds, it's really very broad. There's really a ton of different asset classes.
Yes.
That's why it's important to work with an expert.
Let's jump into resorts, which is a huge topic, and not many know anything about this topic, meaning the ins and outs in this in this whole world of resorts. And I would start with category, which is called hospitality.
Yeah.
And what happened during COVID, which is the unbelievable thing. And I always tell people that it's unprecedented what happened to hospitality, because any other asset class that you calculated has suffered to a certain extent. Multifamily was the most resilient, of course, we know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Retail went down in some places up to 70%, but hospitality, when we calculate hospitality, when we underwrite hospitality, we look at the numbers and we say, okay, at a certain point of the year, you're going to have occupancy at a level of 50%. And if you want to take a worst case scenario, you take a 40% and you still can cover the debt service, and maybe 35%. You still want to cover the debt service. What happened was unprecedented, and it went to zero. And nobody knew that. Nobody expected that. And for the most part in the world. So from your experience, from your perspective, can you tell us a little bit of what happened, A, and B, where is it going?
Yeah, it's very fascinating. We're going to look back. I mean, it's almost like we didn't even blink and this whole crazy transition happened. I think we're still processing it. And we'll look back in a few years and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe that in the matter of months or a couple of years, things changed so dramatically. So you're absolutely right. I mean, if you look at world travel, I mean, I know some statistics locally with the TSA, air travel was down by 96 or 98% year over year on certain days during the pandemic. And, corporations stopped traveling, trade conferences were closed. Look at the ICSC, International Council of Shopping Centers. The entire event was canceled. So there were corporations, and large and small, that were absolutely decimated. And I was watching this from the other end, because myself and a bunch of friends were very opportunistic. And we said, this is a great time to acquire. It's a great time to do value adds and repurposing. During this period, you know, some of the lower end hotels that we were working with, so to speak, we were able to change the programs and create a more longer term housing, and then convert those over to veterans housing and sell off the units or lease them to the VA or government backed rental contracts, and just totally repurpose the asset. At the same time, I have clients and friends who are buying hundreds of hotels this year for pennies on the dollar and repurposing them or remanaging them or rebranding them. Now, what's very interesting is the higher end exclusive resorts like this one I'm going to be listing tomorrow. The occupancy actually never changed throughout the entire period. Maybe it went down by 3 or 4 or 5%, but some of these resorts historically are at 45 to 55% occupancy, independent of what's going on in the world. And indeed, this one specifically is in Traverse City. And that was always a destination. It's on a bay, right? If you're looking at Michigan, I guess this is the way you look at it. It's in this inlet of Lake Michigan. It's huge. I mean, it's bigger than the state of Israel. It's bigger than New Jersey. It's one of the largest freshwater bodies in the world. And this place has always been a destination. So what's interesting is that occupancy never fell. In fact, the ADR, the average daily rate, went up. Occupancy went up at a certain point. And what we notice now is that we're, as I was talking to you before the show, not only is there an opportunity to purchase this incredible cash flowing asset that's on irreplaceable sugar sand real estate, you know, on a freshwater body, you know, huge freshwater with beautiful sand and resort. But there's also the appreciation, there's the market demographics there in Traverse City. What's also interesting is there's a strip of land of 90 feet of sugar sand that's going to be developable. And what I'm noticing is a lot of my colleagues and my clients are interested in getting in on this deal, because guess what? If I'm a professional or they're a professional, maybe they would like to go away for a vacation. Maybe they'd like to work, you know, remotely. Maybe they'd like to get away from the city every now and then. Well, today, corporations and individuals, small businesses, large businesses, et cetera, have recognized that things are never going to be the same. And many more people are now looking for second or third homes to go and work remotely, maybe 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 days a week. So I believe that these exclusive destinations, right, where you have your own land, your own water, your own resources, all that stuff, they're becoming more and more valuable and more in demand, because people don't know when we're going to get shut down, when we're going to open up, if we're going to work from an office, if we're not going to work from an office. And at the end of the day, controlling your destiny and having, you know, a piece of real estate is valuable. And I think that in today's, you know, economic climate and in light of everything that went on with the pandemic, these exclusive resorts have become more and more desirable, not just from a stay perspective, but also from a personal real estate investment perspective.
So this sounds like one of those deals where it's a combination of vacationing and ownership. And it sounds very exciting, by the way.
Yeah.
And we spoke about this. But the one thing I want to ask you is about, let's talk about those huge chains that have resorts all over the place, all over the U.S. And they poured the amount of money that they've poured into those resorts. And it goes anywhere from, you know, the amenities, from the water parks that they put in, or the ski resorts, or anything that you have involved in it and incorporated in it, to the restaurants, because you have the fast foods and you have the full service restaurants. You have so much stuff going on in that one asset, one property, and all of a sudden, boom, shut down. So what is the future of those guys? What is the future of those companies, of those properties? Where are we going with this? Is there any future?
Yeah, I mean, certainly human beings are social by nature. I think that we're seeing a lot of trends that are emerging and that are, you know, speeding along more so because of what happened the last 18 or 24 months. So I'm very curious to see how the digital disruption will affect our behavior as human beings. You know, at a certain point, you know, you and I have never met. We've interacted probably dozens or hundreds of times via social media and different algorithms. You know, this really wasn't possible 5 or 10 years ago. Are we going to continue to do business without ever being in the same state, city, region? Who knows, right? So I think that the digital disruption will affect every aspect of real estate. Now, in terms of actual vacation or leisure or hospitality, what we have to keep in mind is that at the end of the day, one of the aspects that is most important is the same as any other real estate. And that is the underlying fundamentals of the actual dirt, right? Or sand or mountain or whatever it is, right? These resorts, are in many cases on irreplaceable real estate. That's why I'm a fan of the highly exclusive full service resort, not necessarily the Holiday Inn or Wyndham that's on a main corner that might come or might go and population might move, might go away. If something's on an island or something's on a shoreline or something's in a very exclusive place, it almost doesn't matter, because that real estate is going to attract the highest and best use because of its inherent value.
So I'll tell you what, I agree with you that they are on a very exclusive type of land, very unique type of land, a very unique type of location, very desirable location. That I agree with you. But the one thing that I think is a question, I would love to hear what your take on it is, meaning the question that is hovering upon everybody who is dealing with those type of resorts is, how do you keep the debt service? How do you keep paying as long as nothing is happening in it? Because you have to keep it. It's an upkeep that is unparalleled, meaning if you have a hotel, you shut it down. To shut down a hotel during a pandemic, or to shut down a partial hotel. And when it comes to those express service hotels that have businesses and business people are coming in and out, which is sort of happening right now a little bit because people want to do business and they have to travel every once in a while.
Yeah.
The resorts, if you shut it down to bring it back to life and to open it all up, you're talking about the type of utilities that you can't imagine. So what are your thoughts about it? And what do you hear in the industry around you about those challenges?
Yeah. So again, resiliency is the key. Pivoting is the key. I mean, we're looking at resorts that were considering expanding their food and beverage services. And today they don't have to, because the food and beverage is brought by the patron, or should I say through the third party aggregators, think DoorDash, Uber Eats, Grubhub, et cetera, directly to the resort. So the whole experience is changing. I think that, we've also seen very creative operators. I have partners and friends that have hotels in South Florida that, South Florida was shut down very hard at a certain point. And what they ended up doing was they changed everything in the hotel, and they would actually host events where individuals would be one person per room with digital streaming services. And then they would have a party where everyone was in the hotel, this exclusive hotel, the occupancy standards could be adhered to. And now instead of gathering in a ballroom in a restaurant, they're gathering through a screen. So, I'm very curious to see how, again, the digital disruptions will affect the future of hospitality. But I'm equally as interested in how it's going to affect the future of retail and the future of industrial and the future of the lifestyle center, et cetera, et cetera. Again, at the end of the day, human beings, I believe, have an inherent desire to travel, to conquer, to expand, and to really, change their consciousness. And I know myself personally, I always tell my wife and my kids, like, I get 30 minutes outside of Metro Detroit and my mind is totally open. I go to the beach, it's totally open. I lived in Israel like you, and I remember at times I was living in the beach city, at times I was living in a metropolitan city. And I always said to myself, like, I feel different and the people are different when they're in a different destination. And I mean, we could get spiritual if you want, but my take on that is that when we're constantly surrounded by man-made creations, by concrete and structures and roofs and tarmac and all that, it's easy to get lost in the mundane aspects of human creation, right? Now, when one goes out in the ocean or sees a sunset or a mountain or something incredible like that, it's almost impossible to not be humbled. And therefore, I believe that human beings are inherently drawn to these almost like spiritual experiences that are not nearly as typical in the more metropolitan areas. When you get out to the more the earthy or more spiritual locations, I think that human beings are attracted to that. And those beautiful lands are always going to be attractive, and people are always going to want to go there. And at the end of the day, myself as a real estate investor, what is my number one focus right now of all the investment opportunities in front of me? It's getting my own piece of that sugar sand for my own condo, right? Because that is irreplaceable. And that's where my heart is. I went there one time, and after I first saw that, it's like the first time I saw the Mediterranean. I saw that blue and I fell in love.
Amazing. Let's shift gears a little bit. You have your podcast, Dan on Top. What is this?
So it's actually a streamcast. So the traditional Webster or Wikipedia definition of a podcast is actually audio only. When someone has video, it's actually technically called a streamcast. So I have a production company, and we actually have in studio, texts and sound and editing. And then we have a proprietary system that's utilized for other people to log in with. And we create a real live, it's actually called live to tape. So you can watch it live as it's being recorded. And then it's unedited, but it's released, you know, every few days, a new episode. So my main show is Dan on Top of All Things Commercial Real Estate. And I've interviewed about 130 different real estate professionals all over the world. Typically 18-minute episodes, very fast paced, a lot of information jammed in. And I provide a platform for other professionals to have a voice, to leverage our network, to get their message out there, and in turn for our viewers to watch and to receive that value. So people go to danontop.com to learn about all things commercial real estate. I also have created a show called the CRE Pro Show with my partner, Zach Raisinger. Zach and I are the co-creators of the CRE Pro course. And that show is designed to utilize our experience of creating courses and mentorship programs and great video content to have other professionals leverage that and then take that experience, chop it up, put it out to their network so that, again, same thing we were talking about before, it's that win-win-win. We're able to create a forum of almost like a mastermind. It's really like a digital mastermind where people can work together to learn and grow and share ideas and do deals, make friends, become wealthy, have a good time.
Beautiful. Tell me something. I look forward to listen to it and to look into it. And your pro course.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about it. What is it focused? Who is it for, et cetera? Yeah.
So the CRE Pro Course, our website is creprocourse.com. That's creprocourse.com. Essentially, it's a course that's designed to teach people everything they need to know to become top commercial real estate investors or brokers. All the tips, the tricks, the systems, the spreadsheets, the performas, the databasing techniques, the CRM management, deal flow, pipeline management, cold calling. We even have modules teaching people how to use social media like LinkedIn for their brokerage business and investing business. Teaches you all those things that are necessary to be successful. And really, we put it together because in the industry, you know, myself and my partner parallel in different parts of the country, you know, through different organizations, we just recognized that there were like these like secrets, right? People weren't willing to share with us, and we kind of had to figure it out on our own. So over a few decades, we each came up with our best practices and shared them. And it was very interesting to notice that he had a very parallel experience that I did, both in the growing up in the industry, but also I was getting 3 or 4 calls a week from individuals that said, "Hey Dan, I'm getting into commercial real estate investing, or I'm becoming a broker, or I'm already an investor, I'm already a broker, I want to do more. Can you give me 20, 30, 40 minutes of your time and we can chat on the phone?" And I loved doing that. But again, I noticed, just like flipping, that there was only so much of me. What I recognized was that if there was a need for this and there was a demand and people were coming, we needed to build it, right? Kind of like reverse field of dream style. Like, they came, so we built it. So therefore, we created a digital platform that's a course. It's available on demand 24/7. And people go through 25 different modules. And afterwards, every single person that finishes the course, they reach out to us for a mentorship program. So now we have a CRE Pro mentorship program where we literally have one-on-one time. You can book time with me, with Zach, with other instructors to go through any question you want. Through video, we share documents, we share screens, we do it on the phone as well. And it's designed, again, to essentially, you're renting our experience, right? And through that, we've created a whole mentorship program where other people like you, Yishai, you can get involved with us. You become a mentor. We create the program. And then you and I together bring more students so that you can leverage your time more effectively. To me, it's the epitome of a win-win-win.
This is beautiful. Now that we have to say our goodbyes, tell everybody, you guys, look, you obviously can see the links above, below, everything. Dan, tell everybody where they can find you.
Dan@danontop.com. That's Dan@danontop.com. The website is danontop.com. You can check out the course at the creprocourse.com. That's creprocourse.com. I am the senior director of The Lukowitz Group. We also have a website, The Lukowitz, LEWKOWICZ group.com. Reach out to me on social media. If you have my phone number, give me a call. I'm really here to add value. That's what we firmly believe, is that we add value, everything else follows. And if there's anything I can do for you, Yishai, or your audience, or anybody watching this, please reach out and let's find ways to build great things together.
100%. You guys heard it. If you're on the more professional side, you have Dan here. You want to find great deals. You want to talk to Dan. You want to find great opportunities to invest, whether you are on the GP or LP side, you can go talk to Dan. He has the ability, connections, and the know-how. And if you want to learn more, you heard him, You can find out about his course, and I'll see you guys in the next show. Dan, thank you so much for being with us.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Beautiful. Take care, you guys. Hey guys, thanks for joining me in this CRE Shark Eye show. I hope you enjoyed it. And go subscribe, download, do whatever you guys need to do. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves.